I'm John McKee, editor of Messianic Apologetics, and this is Messianic Theology Explained. At least, we hope so. Animal sacrifice. One of the most frequent objections or criticisms to today's Messianic people who express that they have a Torah foundation for their reading of the Holy Scriptures, or they identify as Torah observant, is, of course, well, what do you do with animal sacrifice? Because any survey of Moses' teaching, the Pentateuch, would easily reveal how a huge sector of its instruction concerns animal sacrifice, the Levitical priesthood, and the tabernacle. And just off the bat, these are instructions which no one can observe today because there is no operating Levitical priesthood, tabernacle, or temple at the holy place in Jerusalem. So, if one considers himself or herself to be Torah observant, there has to be an appropriate framework for approaching the animal sacrifices in the Holy Scriptures. It should go without saying, but animal sacrifice is an area where having an original audience first perspective is doubtlessly required. What did the Levitical priesthood, tabernacle, temple, and its system of animal sacrifices mean for ancient Israel in the ancient Near East? Have you, as a Bible reader, ever looked at the perspective of animal sacrifices from the ancients? How did the ancients approach it? Well, one of the most obvious ways the ancients approached animal sacrifice is how the wealth of ancient people in an agrarian agricultural society was found in their flocks and their herds, in their livestock. And so when some kind of an offense was committed and an animal had to be sacrificed, people were literally sacrificing their wealth. It is sad to say this, but ancient pagans, the Greeks and the Romans you encounter in the Apostolic Scriptures, the Book of Acts in particular, they had a better handle on animal sacrifice than 20th and 21st century evangelical Christians, particularly in the West, where many of us have not even been to a slaughterhouse. We just go to the supermarket, we see meat that has been butchered and packaged under cellophane, and we purchase it. We don't really have that strong a handle on animals, slaughtering, blood, etc. Now, within the system of animal sacrifices you encounter in the Torah, animal sacrifices were mainly present to handle the presence of sin. A common passage you can consider would be Leviticus 5, verses 5 and 6. So it shall be, when he becomes guilty in one of these, that he shall confess that in which he has sinned. He shall also bring his guilt offering to the Lord for his sin, which he has committed, a female from the flock, a lamb or a goat as a sin offering, so the priest shall make atonement on his behalf for his sin. Leviticus 5, 5 and 6, New American Standard. Now that gives you a basic approach to animal sacrifices in the Torah. Some kind of an offense was committed. A person had to bring an animal to the priest at the tabernacle or temple. The sin which was committed had to be confessed verbally with the priest present, and then the priest would make sure that restitution would be made before the Lord as the animal was slaughtered. Now, for certain, when you get into the Levitical priesthood, the animal sacrifices of the Torah, there are many other sacrifices, whether they were daily sacrifices being offered, specific sacrifices at the appointed times, and especially the sacrifices involved with Yom Kippur or the Day of Atonement. The position of the Apostolic Scriptures or New Testament is that animal sacrifice is insufficient to provide a permanent solution to the human sin problem. Only the single sacrifice of Yeshua the Messiah on the tree is sufficient for a permanent sacrifice for the human sin problem, a permanent resolution to it. This is what is communicated in Hebrews 10, verses 11 through 14. And every priest stands daily ministering and offering time after time the same sacrifices, which can never take away sins. But he, having offered one sacrifice for sins for all time, sat down at the right hand of God, waiting from that time onward until his enemies be made a footstool for his feet. For by one offering he has perfected for all time those who are sanctified. Hebrews 10, 11 through 14, New American Standard. So it's clear enough that the sacrifice of Yeshua on the tree provides permanent atonement and a permanent resolution to the problem of human sin. And those who believe in him have to appropriate that to their lives. But one of the big questions, and indeed debates, as it concerns the Torah and animal sacrifice and the Jewish background of Yeshua and most especially the apostles. Did the apostles look at animal sacrifices occurring in their day as some kind of an affront or even an abomination? And the answer to this would, of course, have been no. Even though Yeshua of Nazareth was sacrificed, he was buried, and he was resurrected, and he ascended into heaven and has provided the permanent solution to the human sin problem. For 40 years after his ascension into heaven, there were still animal sacrifices going on in the temple in Jerusalem. And you do not see anywhere in the Messianic Scriptures, the New Testament, those sacrifices somehow treated as an abomination or an affront to God. You do see that they were inferior to the final sacrifice of Yeshua because they cannot provide a permanent solution to the human sin problem, but nowhere were they treated as some kind of an affront to God or an abomination. In the epistle to the Hebrews in particular, Hebrews' audience had to be assured that without the presence of animal sacrifice, the priestly service of Yeshua the Messiah and his sacrifice were going to be sufficient. It's widely agreed that the epistle to the Hebrews was written on the heels of the Jewish revolt in Judea and the impending destruction of the temple and with it the removal of animal sacrifices from the scene. So if you grew up, particularly as a first century Jewish person, even in the diaspora, and you knew that there were animal sacrifices going on constantly in the temple, you had come to believe in Yeshua as Messiah, you had come to even believe in his final sacrifice, you still had in your conscience this safety net of knowing that there's still animal sacrifices going on. But with the impending destruction of the temple, those sacrifices would be gone. And so a huge part of what Hebrews communicated to its ancient audience was that that was going to be okay. And you could rely on the priestly service of Yeshua after the order of Melchizedek in heaven and his permanent sacrifice. Now today, in the year 2024, in the 21st century, many of us who hold to a premillennial eschatology, and we believe that there's going to be a future 70th week of Israel, we are looking toward some future moment in history involving the abomination of desolation, Daniel 9, Matthew 24, and with it, a cessation of animal sacrifices, meaning that at some future point, there's going to be a restored Levitical priesthood, a tabernacle or temple operating in Jerusalem, and that the anti-Messiah or Antichrist is going to come on the scene, terminate those sacrifices, and declare himself to be God, to be the Savior of the world. We know that in the event that there are restored animal sacrifices in Jerusalem on the Temple Mount, that it is going to create a huge ruckus in the Christian world, and that you are going to see anti-Semitism and anti-Judaism reach levels which it has never been seen before, probably exceeding the anti-Semitism of Nazi Germany and the Holocaust. But there are many people in the Christian world who, while not quite understanding animal sacrifice, they hold to a premillennial eschatology, and they at least recognize that these are going to be important parts of prophecy being fulfilled. And so on that basis alone, if you speak against these things, you're speaking against God's sovereign will and plan. Now, beyond the 70th week of Israel, when you review Ezekiel chapters 40 through 44, you do see that in the future millennium, there is going to be a restored Levitical priesthood and sacrificial system, although with direct messianic oversight. The Lord Yeshua, King of Israel, will be present to explain what these things actually mean for those present in the millennium. But many premillennialists recognize that the only way you can do proper justice to Ezekiel 40 through 44 is recognize that there will be a future millennial temple and that there will be animal sacrifice. Once again, we often don't have the perspective of animal sacrifice as the ancients did, as ancient Israel in the ancient Near East, even pagan Greeks and Romans in the first century. And so part of our ongoing maturation as Bible readers and as believers should involve, how do I understand these things from those who originally received these instructions and implemented them? Now, if you would like to know a little more about this whole issue of animal sacrifice and its relationship to our faith in Yeshua, I would recommend you get a copy of our ministry's commentary, Hebrews for the Practical Messianic, which, while lauding the God-given value of the Levitical priesthood and sacrificial system, heavily emphasizes the everlasting value of the Messiah's Melchizedekian priesthood in heaven and his final sacrifice for human beings. If there is a particular topic or issue you would like to see us address on Messianic Theology Explained, I have a stack of index cards which continues to get topped off. And I very much appreciate those of you who take the time to contact me and let me know what matters to you. On behalf of Outreach Israel Ministries and Messianic Apologetics, thank you so much for your continued prayers, encouragement, and donations. Without you, we couldn't do any of this. We'll see you again soon with another installment of Messianic Theology Explained. Until then, may God bless you, shalom, and take care.